Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, this is Nazim Rashid, coming at you live in 3D, based out of Phoenix, Arizona area, and a fantastic, miraculous day. I greet you with the greetings of peace, the only God can be with you. All right, we have another fantastic, fun show today. Yes, on conscious parenting and personal growth, this being part 16. Yep, part 16. Okay, so if you're new to this, to our listening audience, I implore you to go back in the archives, blogtalkradio.com/emailalfred. Again, blogtalkradio.com/emailalfred. And then scroll down till you see the Conscious Parenting and Personal Growth series. And there's a little button, I guess, where it says newest to latest, like A to Z there. You kind of click on there, see the old archives, and look for Conscious Parenting and Personal Growth. And you can click on the ones you want or just go from the beginning. And you can download all of these to your hard drive free of charge. That's right. When you click on the show page and you see my picture there and show starts running, go to the very top with the audio bar right there, and right to the right, you'll see a tiny little cloud. You click on that one, and that will download it to your hard drive. Then you have to rename it. It'll come out in numbers like show 8, 19, 11, 12, and just name it to whatever you want to call it, and there you go. You can put it into your iPod or burn CDs, give them away as gifts, and so forth and so on. It'll be yours from that moment on, all right? Okay. As you regulars know, I have been reading and expounding from the personal growth areas in my book, Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. Yes. A human manual that will help you transform those old negative emotions into positive memories. Yeah, you can transform those things. Yeah, learning how to love yourself at deep levels and create the life you've always desired and be a co-creator. Yeah. Because you co-create whether you know it or not. Yeah, for sure. So the book is all about that. And I've had a series on addictions and recovery and 12 Principles of Recovery series, one on marriages. And now I'm doing one on probably the last one on conscious parenting and personal growth, all based out of the same book, just using the various personal growth aspects and focusing on a certain topic area. Now we're looking at personal growth and conscious parenting, okay? All right. Now, last session in our part 15, we were talking about the attributes of God that we should emulate. If you're a parent, so your children can see you emulating these areas, such as a source of peace, love, compassion, in those areas. Mm-hmm. When children see that in you, they become that themselves. And in the personal growth area, of course, you want to be like this because this is how you have the best relationships and being the best by yourself even. Yeah, for sure. If you're full of anger or resentment, who wants to be around you? You want to cause arguments and you want to just, destroy someone else's peace? Who wants to be around you? Yeah, not good. So that's why it's good for both areas, the conscious parenting and the personal growth areas. All right. So we'll talk about how you can manage and handle emotions. By the way, I've had over 20 years in a personal growth area, more than that, but mental health and drug counseling fields. I went through 12 steps myself. I wrote the book in 4 years and have a lot of client stories in the book. You can get it on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, ebook fashion or paperback. It's 412. Pages, $20 there. Mm-hmm. Yep, $20. Yeah, that's what it costs. You can go to my website, cloudsofabundance.com. 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 And I can personally autograph it and mail it myself to you. Okay? All right. You've come a long way. We're winding down, actually, in the series. Yeah, for sure. So it's very important to understand when you're looking at establishing a new life for yourself. A lot of us want to hold on to parts of the old life because we like it, we're comfortable, and we're fearful of letting it go because that's all we've known. You know, say when you got an old beat-up rocking chair. You rock in that rocking chair and rock and rock and rock, you know, starting to fall apart. You see, you know, I need to get out of this chair. It's going to fall apart. But, you know, I know what the rocking chair is going to produce, a nice, comfortable place for me to sit down and rock. I don't know what the next chair is going to give me. I know about this one. So I'm going to stay right here until I guess I fall out. Well, that's how we are in relationships. That's how we are with dysfunctional cycles in our life. You know, you might be one that's controlling, you want to control your mate, you want to control people, you want to abuse people, you're a bully, or you have some addictions, you see, and you know it's wrong, but you do it anyway because, you know, you've always done it, and you know this life, you see. You might be running over people in the meantime, but you say, it's comfortable for me, so I'm fine, so that's okay. If people just fall out, may have issues with the way I'm mistreating them, then that's up to them to be there or not be there. I'm going to keep doing what I am doing. So a lot of us have that. I was talking to a friend of mine who's a lawyer, and he has a little ADD, and he's one himself, you know, who was just, tell me that, hey, Nazim, you know, this idea of reconciling the past, doesn't work for me. I had a fantastic childhood. Everything was just fine, and I don't need to reconcile anything. Everything was just okay. I said, well, how would your brother, he has a younger brother, how would your brother feel about that? Well, I don't know about him, but I was fine. Well, the fact is that he ran over his brother. You know, he bullied him and so forth, muscled him and all that. So, yeah, it's kind of like, you know, you got someone sitting on top of a bulldozer, their life is totally fine. So are you the one that's on top of that bulldozer? Are you the one that's controlling people or telling people what to do? Are you the one that's abusing your mate, abusing your wife, abusing your husband? Are you the one that just can't let that bottle down, can't put that crack pipe down? Are you the one that cannot support your children, cannot, I'm talking about emotionally, you better be paying, you know, but I'm talking about physically, but I'm saying, are you not supporting them emotionally? Are you not making sure they know they are the greatest thing that God created? Huh? If you fall in those categories, and most of you do, this message is for you. I had a dysfunctional background myself, and all you all probably did too. I'm sure you did. You know? So I'm telling you, you cannot have the new life when you're still holding on to the old. I'll say it again. You can't have the new life when you're still holding on to the old. No. So you cannot pray for the power to carry out God's will. You know, we do that. We, in part of the 12 principles of recovery chapter I have in the book, it says you pray for the power to carry God's will out in your life. Okay, well, you cannot pray for the power to carry out God's will for you when you are not willing to let go of the so-called power that you have now. You're holding on to the ways of the old self. Creates the blockage that prevents God's spirit to come into your life. Once you realize, you can allow the gates to open up and invite and encourage God to enter your soul. Make a home there and start directing your life. You see, now God is now the pilot with you as the co-pilot, riding along with your inner child, both helping you in all areas of your life. Now, some people got it twisted around. Some people say, God is my co-pilot. God is right there riding shotgun. No. Not good enough. Say God is now the pilot. But look, put God totally in charge of your life and you as the ride along. Yeah. Now you know you have the power to carry God's will out in your life because God dwells inside, is welcome there along with a sense of deeply felt peace. You got that? Yeah, it's like riding in a car looking at the rearview mirror the whole time. Looking at where you came from, you know, and the life you're leaving behind and all that. No. Let it go. For your own sake, let it go. Let it go. All right, we'll go into identifying and managing emotions. Okay? And you know this is needed. You might say, well, I'm sure you're not asking the question, what does this have to do with conscious parenting? It has everything to do with conscious parenting and personal growth, everything. Don't even think otherwise. You know? This area has enormous benefits as you are addressing critical issues of concerns with your young ones. The need to identify, define, and manage the various emotions they are experiencing. Your children are inundated with messages that sanction domestic violence, societal violence, wholesale disrespect toward everyone, women, seniors, self, and all authority figures, drug use, criminal lifestyle, sexual promiscuity, a non-recognition of family, healthy family values. Now, being products of their environment, children not only reflect what's around them, they accept those influences as normal to the point of actually being their environment. If someone gets hurt from their accepted lifestyle, they will blame the victim for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. They take no personal responsibility. Now, we know youth, maybe your own childhood self, maybe your own self, younger self, who have caused some pain in their lives to the point of wanting a different direction for themselves and possibly their offspring. Yeah, many youth are having multiple births before they are out of high school. They are looking for new tools. Their old tools will only provide what they have been receiving, which is more hurt, misery, pain, poverty, unsuccessful experiences, unhealthy relationships, and short-lived jobs. They are used to getting angry and then reacting to their anger violently. Ooh. So in this chapter, this identifying and managing emotions, we're going to clearly define emotions separately from feelings. And I'm going to do that. We're going to explain emotional intelligence, EQ. Now, you know that's important for us. Now, you know that's a real big deficit in our communities. Emotional intelligence. We like to fly off at the handle all the time. It's part of our culture, you know? Yep. So we're going to talk about that along with its benefits. Explain the physical and emotional effects of different emotions and feelings, and how we manage our emotions using and developing our EQ. We will know ourselves, make better choices, apply consequential thinking, evaluate and re-choose, motivate ourselves and choose optimism as our daily regimen. Now, we will also learn to give of ourselves, develop empathy for others, learn how to pause before anger sets in, and use the analytical part of our brain, which offsets the anger response, recognizing the signs of danger and protecting our peaceful state of mind. Well, that's a big pill swallow, I know. A lot of y'all saying, look, if I can just take care of one of those things, I'll be all right. You know, that's a big pill. We're going to treat the big pill like the old saying goes, you know, how do you swallow an elephant? And you all got an answer? One bite at a time. Yeah. All right. Okay. Now, the wild horse, I use the wild horse metaphor a lot, that paints a picture of the benefits of having emotional intelligence. The wild horse is symbolic of our raw, uncultured, untamed potential, and also appetites of the flesh. Until we get the horse contained and controlled, it will do us absolutely no good. We learn how to catch the horse, pull it into a corral. We can then tame the horse, ride the horse, and basically make the horse serve our needs. Now, when we learn how to harness our potential and the appetites of the flesh, we pull them into a controlled setting. Follow me now? Okay. Then we can examine it and afterwards use or ride that potential, making the best of it as it improves our lives. We will then be successful, okay? Our potential is now realized and we are reaping the rewards. We are now directing and controlling, yeah, riding our potential and fleshly appetites on the battlefield where there's imminent danger, also in the city where there is lust and temptation. The appetites of the flesh are now not lusting for the filth of the world, but have a hunger for purity and moral excellence. Like that? Well, all right. You can have it too. Now, before anger sets in, we always get a sign. Oh, yeah, and I want you all to listen, especially all in those abusive relationships. Okay? Speaking main to the sisters, even though brothers get it too. Okay, so listen very carefully. So what you have to do is how to set up mental detour signs to redirect the oncoming negativity so your peace is not disturbed. Mm-hmm. We start by noticing any kind of change starting to occur. Sweating palms, heart rate increasing, breathing rhythm starting to change, hair starting to tingle, nerves in the spine getting agitated, jaw tightening, fists clenching. Every thought you think and every word you speak sends messages into the universe, creating energy which comes back to help you or to hurt you. So you have to ask yourself, what are you sending out there? What are you sending out there right now? What are you doing right now? What kind of messages are you sending out there right now? Huh? So you protect your peaceful state by being guardians over your thoughts. When a particular thought starts going astray, we are to pull it back or immediately replace it with a good and loving thought. Mm-hmm. Now, when we analyze faulty behavior, we start by examining the A, B, C of the situation. Hear me now. A, B, C, okay? A stands for antecedent, or what came before, where the problem originated. B stands for the actual behavior, what we actually witnessed. And C stands for consequences, what happened as a result of the behavior. Now, too many times when adults intervene in escalating arguments or fighting, they don't go far enough when they ask the youth, what happened here and who started it? What they get in these sometimes public settings where other youth are present is a response that the troublemaking youth is comfortable in verbalizing. He or she doesn't feel safe talking about what the real antecedent is. No. Unless the adult knows how to ask the right questions in the right safe environment. Okay? All right. I'll give you an example here, like in a school situation, since this really goes to a lot of you parents out there, all right? Okay? All right, but remember, the ABC is very important for abusive marriages, too. What started it? All right? Remember, the sweating palms, heart racing, all those things are beginning signs that something's going to happen. So you want to stop things right there. When your hair starts to tingle, hey, say, hey, I stopped to take a breath. Yeah, okay. Now, here's a school situation for your parents. They have school children. Let's say the initiator is Paul and the defender is Robert. Okay. Paul tells the principal that Robert was looking at him in a mocking kind of way. That by itself is a violation of the street code that Paul lives by. He says, he looked at me funny. In his mind, he is justified and thinks that the principal should be able to understand his so-called logic. The principal tells Paul that his behavior on campus is a violation of the school policies regarding fighting. Yeah. You know, I guess Paul jumped on Robert. Yeah, I guess so. So he tells Paul that his behavior on campus is a violation of the school policies regarding fighting, and he will be suspended after a meeting is held with his parents. Now, Paul gets even more mad and yells at the principal. You can't tell my parents what happened, calls for security, and then notifies the parents. The mother comes down, single-parent household now, which is most of y'all, and is embarrassed when told of the fighting story. She berates Paul and tells him that he is on house arrest for a few days. They both leave, and the school administration goes back to normal. Now, can't you see that something is terribly wrong with this picture, if that's all there is to it? Did the principal really take the time to investigate the antecedent here? And what about the perspective from Robert? This is what is wrong with too many interventions with our troubled schools and our troubled youth. Not near enough people are concerned enough to take the time to ask the deeper questions so that the youth will feel that somebody cares enough to really listen to their inner cries for attention. See, there are some needs that are going on unmet, not dealt with, and unfulfilled. With this kind of pressure, when it is present like this, it is only a matter of time until something undesirable happens. A few days go by, and Paul's now arrested for aggravated assault and attempted robbery at a nearby convenience store. He is locked up, and nobody knows what got into him. His mother is perplexed. His friends are somewhat surprised, though not totally. And the principal is glad that Paul's tirade on campus was only a minor one. See, Paul is out of the picture, and things are back to normal, right? Except for the confused state at his house with his mother not knowing what she did wrong. She thinks to herself that she provided the basic needs, a personal computer, some of the electronic toys that he wanted, and clothes, which she told him that she didn't approve of, a cell phone, and limited use of the car. Wow. What more could she have done? She keeps asking herself. She draws a blank, takes some sleeping pills, and lays down exhausted. She is overwhelmed, stressed out, frustrated, and burnt out. Wow. What could have been done differently in this situation? Well, let's try it again. The principal intervenes, separates the students, asks nothing of the students there on the scene, isolates Paul first, and begins right there in a closed room alone with Paul. He gets some water for Paul and puts it in front of him. Sits close by and asks in a calm voice, what happened out there? Paul tells him, Robert was giving me dirty looks, so I felt disrespected and felt it was necessary to punch him to show him that he wasn't a punk and would not take that from him or anybody else. His friends there, he says, didn't like Robert either. They all knew it was a matter of time before he would cross the line with Paul. His group of buddies all adhered to the same street code conduct. And because of his peers being present, he felt he had to throw down to show to his group that he was down with them, and thus he was saving face. The principal listens attentively, without judgments, and reflected back to Paul that it sounds like a lot of anger is there and doesn't feel good. Is that right, Paul? Paul nods in agreement. The principal then asks, Paul, how's life at home? Paul says everything there was fine, except that his mom bugs him all the time. Gets on his last nerve. The principal then asks him what his mom does that bothers him so much. Paul states that his mother stressed all the time about everything. His own father hasn't paid child support in a couple of years, and she is working all the overtime she can to pay bills, and she is unapproachable when he wants to talk to her. Whenever she focuses on him, she complains that he is not doing enough around the house to help her out. She never listens. She never sits and listens, and she is constantly complaining and blames the only one in the house that is available for blaming. Who? Paul. Principal says, it seems from what you are telling me that you are angry at several things here. You're angry that your father is absent and non-supporting. Your mother is blaming you on a regular basis. Unavailable when you need to talk to her, and there's nobody else there for you to talk to, confide in, and work things out. Is that right so far, Paul? Paul nods. He goes on. That would make me feel lonely, even abandoned. Do you feel some of that, Paul? He nods again. But this time with watery eyes. He goes on. That is an awful feeling to have, and it must really make you angry every time you think about it. Is that right? He says they looks right in the eye, him right in the eye. Yeah, it does. Goes on. And that's probably what caused you to be on edge in the hall when Robert walked by and looked at you. Is that right? Paul agrees. Well, looking back, now that you are much calmer now, did Robert have any negative history with you? Paul says, no, I don't even know that boy. I just didn't like the way he looked at me. The principal says, well, when you are thinking angry thoughts and kind of caught up in your unfortunate home situation, you tend to see the world around you and the people in it in a kind of distorted fashion. So you look outside and you only see the problems. You are in the mall and you see people looking at you. You go into one of the stores there, and the employees and customers all notice you coming in, stop noticing everything you are doing there. You ask yourself, why is everybody looking at me? See, you are carrying paranoia, anger, and the unsettled emotion of abandonment around with you. And until this is rectified, you will continue to think that everybody is focused on you. Just like here on campus. Other male students that you are not familiar with are going to appear to give you dirty looks. And in your mind, you perceive that they are laughing at you. And this makes you mad enough to punch them out. Am I on track here, Paul? Paul bites his lip, looks away, and nods again in the affirmative. The principal empathizes with Paul and says, he understands how he could act in the way that he did, but that it is unacceptable and against the rules of the school. The principal suggests that Paul and his mother counseling. He then states that he has to phone his mother and that he will probably be expelled, but that he is not abandoning him and he can call anytime and make appointments to see him anytime also. See? Aha. Paul doesn't like the probable consequences, but he appreciates what the principal did for him, even though he is still angry. Deep down, it feels like he was listened to for the first time. All right, now we know why it is so important to find out where the real starting point originated. I know most of us are not schooled in psychology, counseling, or some other behavioral health modality, but we can all learn more to find out why our children, why we as children acted the way we did or do. Every behavior has a feeling attached to it, and some kind of emotional base precedes it. Hear that? I'll go into more detail regarding emotions versus feelings later on, so hold on to that inquiring mind right now, all right? Now, the main problem I have seen with parents is that they are not that motivated or interested enough in the healthy emotional development of the children to take this kind of time to ensure that the child has all the necessary tools they need to have. There are also other parents who don't have any idea of what I am talking about and want to keep things just the way they are. So these necessary tools will give them a balanced, developed, intelligent, emotional consciousness. Yeah. I can think of so many examples like this, you know? Yeah, I'm telling you. I'll share another story. I was teaching in a special high school for pregnant and parenting teens. Yeah, hired me as a personal development coordinator to teach peer counseling. Yeah, conflict resolution. My class had the objective learning, listening, and skills and all that. The goal was to develop a student's ability to be empathic with each other, listen attentively to one another, learn valuable communication skills that they can use as a life skill and as a way to help other students that need someone around their own age to listen to them and help them. All right, so hear this. This is really interesting. I would say funny, but that's how some people are. One day, a mother of one of my students came in and demanded to see the principal to discuss a complaint. Well, when she met with the principal, she said that her daughter was complaining to her about Mr. Rashid's class. Principal had me come in before she entertained the discussion, okay? The mother went on to say that her daughter needs to have fun in Mr. Rashid's class. Emphasize fun. All right? The principal and I looked at each other, and then the principal asked the mother to go on describing what she really means. The mother said that her daughter told her that all she is doing in there was role-playing, where one student has some type of problem and the other student is supposed to ask certain questions like Mr. Rashid wants them to ask to get clear on what the problem is and to help the person solve their problem without telling them what to do from what they, the peer counseling student, think they should do. She went on to say, that the students aren't allowed to speak their own mind when they are role-playing, and that they can't talk like they normally talk to each other, but they had to follow Rashid's rules. That's not right. Students talk a certain kind of way. They understand each other, and they know how to have fun in the process. So why can't they act like themselves and have fun in that class? They should be watching some TV programs or soap operas or sitcoms and then discuss what happened like they do at lunchtime and when they're out of school. That would be a fun thing for them to do in there. End quote. All right, now, I didn't say a word, but just looked at the principal. Inside, I was cracking up. The principal replied to the mother saying, "We are trying to develop some leadership training skills in these girls and show them that they do have something valuable inside. Skills that can serve them well in life and skills that others can benefit from as well. Once their self-esteem and self-image standards are raised and internalized, they won't be prime targets for the controlling, inconsiderate, drug culture-oriented, abusive boys out here that want to take advantage of them, impregnate them again, and abandon them. The reason many of them are here because they are focused on having fun, quote-unquote, not acting and being in an intelligent manner. Mr. Rashid's class is designed to address those concerns and hopefully give the students a share in his vision for healthy, empowered, emotionally balanced minds. But they can only reach their destination if their parents are supportive in this process." End quote. I chimed in by saying, "Ma'am, this class is designed to help your daughter, others in becoming peer counselors, where they will be in an honored position to help other students who are having some kind of challenge on campus, or just be a sounding board for them. They are learning communication and listening skills, learning how to build their self-esteem and self-image, and how to effectively help other students in need. Now, in order to achieve this goal in our limited time here, I need to have all the students operate in a certain methodical manner in the time frames that we are given, end quote, right? Now, the mother sneered and sucked her teeth at the principal and me, stood up and said in a low tone, well, I still think that they should have some fun in there, end quote, as she walked out. We looked again at each other with the body language that said, oh, well, there goes another statistic. Saw that? A lot of parents are like that, you know. They feed their kids problems, see, instead of feeding the solutions. The reason we lose so many youth after they are exposed to these kind of empowering classes and experiences is because this kind of model is outside of the culture of the home, outside of the group esteem and standard. The parents not being exposed themselves to this kind of personal development sabotage the school's efforts, thus reinforcing the accepted standard of low self-esteem and low self-image. Tally opens the door to more and more life tragedies. And the beat goes on. Now, y'all know somebody that fits this description to a T, don't you? Don't you? Yeah, buddy. Yeah, I'm talking about emotions here. Now, you know, this applies to everybody, not just the parents, everybody. Now, emotions, I'm going to try and go slow. A lot of certain terminology here that counselors and therapists use all the time. So I'll try to break it down as much as I can. Now, you can always email me at nrbookclub@gmail.com, nrbookclub@gmail.com, all right? Okay, emotions occur when there are certain biological, experiential, and cognitive states which all occur simultaneously, okay? The biological pertains to activity or state of your physiology. Again, biology pertains to activity or state of your physiology, something inside of you physically. Experiential pertains to experience, what you dealt with personally. Cognitive pertains to your thinking, the state of your mind. Okay? Our emotions originate from exposure to specific situations. The nature and intensity of the emotion are usually related to cognitive activity in the form of the perception of the situation. Follow me now. The thought process or perception results in the experience and or the expression of a related feeling. Emotion is an umbrella term which includes the situation, the interpretation and perception of the situation, and the response or feeling related to the perception of the situation. The feelings are more conscious and are the response part of the emotion. Follow that? Emotions, feelings, got it? I'll say it again. Feelings are more conscious and are the response part of the emotion. Feelings are a learned response in the culture in which we grew up. Now, emotions are our responses to the world around us, and they are created by the combination of our thoughts, feelings, and actions. You see, we create our own emotions. So our responses are shaped by our thoughts, by what we tell ourselves. Okay? I'm trying to let you see this, because when you come home and you're that kind of a abusing, controlling husband, you come home, you feel you got to talk down your wife and blast her and beat her up and blast everybody because you had a tiring day. No justification for it. Tune in here. Now, as I clarify, as I clarify the understanding of our beliefs and patterns, see, now we all learn that we are actually choosing our own lives. We are the co-creators of our lives. Yeah, you are. We are the molders of our lives, and it is we that take responsibility for the outcome of our lives and nobody else. Can't blame anybody with this. Now, there's no more blaming our parents, teachers, other family members, peers, media influence for the maladies, maladies and tragedies in our lives. The cards are in our hands, okay? No one's coming to save you. I'm telling you, those who believe in a savior coming, it doesn't work. Nobody coming. Matter of fact, I have a sign on my office that says, "Nobody's coming. God sent you." That's a good saying. The cards are in your hands, nobody else's. I was born with a clean slate. You weren't born in a simple way. You're here in a clean slate, ready to sin or not sin, depending on your influences, internal and outside. You see? Mainly outside. So, very important to understand this. See, we pick the car that we want. We drive on the road of our pleasure, and we each create the path of our own desires. Emotions are the whole experience. It is what comes before the feeling. Here's some examples. All right. The feeling is depression. I feel depressed. I feel depressed. That's all. The emotion is sadness or anger. Catch that? The feeling is anger and rage. The emotion is fear of abandonment and loneliness. Got that? Got that? I'll say it again. The feeling is depression. The emotion, what came before the original state, is sadness or anger. Second example, the feeling is anger and rage. The original state, the emotion is fear of abandonment and loneliness. So it's very important to find out where things are originating. Yeah, for sure. All right. For some kids, we ask them, "How did that feel?" Their answer is, "Well, that feels like the time when I got lost in the mall." See, that is their emotional response. Now, you can't capture that emotion by saying, "I was really scared," which is simply a feeling response. See, that feeling and the situation are all wrapped up together. Okay? Now, emotional intelligence. We need this so much in our communities. We need this. I'm telling you, a lot of us have some issues here. I say, first of all, go to school. A lot of us are still uneducated and justified not going to school, finishing school. Go to school. But you got to realize that emotions are your puppet. You're the puppeteer, not the other way around. All right? Emotional intelligence means to integrate emotions and awareness. It means to align feelings and reason. It means to direct actions with vision to solve problems. Means to resolve conflicts. Means to creatively enhance inter and intra-personal relationships. Okay? Yeah, for sure. Uh-huh. That means relationships you have with yourself and with others. All right? Emotional intelligence is also the combination of knowing yourself, choosing for yourself, giving of yourself. Yeah. It includes the skills, habits, and understanding which shapes our thoughts, feelings, and actions in our relationship with ourselves and with others. It involves the ability to perceive accurately, appraise and express emotion, access and generate feelings when they facilitate thought, regulate emotions to promote emotional and intellectual growth. It is also the capacity for recognizing our own feelings and those of others, motivating others, managing emotions well in ourselves and in our relationships. Got that? Managing emotions well in ourselves and in our relationships. Oh, yeah, for sure. Got that? Okay. Mm-hmm. Very, very important. Now, Daniel Goleman, that's an important name, because Daniel Goleman wrote the book on emotional intelligence that I read and I studied, and that was the basis for this part of my book and discussion. Daniel Goleman, look him up. He says emotional intelligence is being able to motivate oneself and persist in the face of frustrations, to control impulse and delay gratification, to regulate one's moods and keep distress from swamping the ability to think, to empathize and to hope, end quote. And that's something, you know, we all need that. You know, we need control, impulse, and delay gratification. And when you're angry, you know, you actually destroy the ability to think. Cloud your mind. You can't even think. Yeah, I'm telling you. See, that's why we have to clearly identify our emotions and our feelings. This is so important for our children to start recognizing and acknowledging their feelings at the earliest age possible. We as healthy, conscious adults, reducing the various feelings and emotions as early as possible so our children can know and differentiate their feelings. They need to know consciously what horror feels like internally as opposed to feeling scared. Yeah. Be very basic with this one, as it is vital to get through to them in this area. For example, at the age of 5, you can write the word horror in big letters on a white or blackboard or big construction paper. Then you can demonstrate the word by putting on either a monster movie or some other scary one, or act out a scary scene so the child will get the idea. They will know afterwards that the horror feeling came when they viewed something that was scary but didn't affect them personally, whereas the scary feeling came when they're personally affected. See the difference? Now your 5-year-old has internalized the difference between scary and horror. More how many adults do that? They now have added a new word into their vocabulary. See, the more our youth can clearly identify the emotions and feelings, the clearer their problem will be to you. The child will now know how to address what they are going through. This is very important. Oh, yeah, you need to know what the child is going through, what they're really feeling, especially when it's sent to these public schools. You can't produce a solution to a problem when you can't identify the problem. Okay? All right, here are some examples of emotions and feelings. I'm going to give you some examples that we as adults and they as children should know how to identify when they appear in our lives. Okay? Yeah, for sure. All right? I'll give you the opposing energy of some, you know, of the emotions and feelings. The opposing energy there. Like sadness. Okay? Happiness. Oh. Anger. Peaceful. Fear. Confident. Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, still, you know, when the children are fearful, say, be confident in what God has given you. God has given you the tools you need for the complete transformation of your life. Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Guilt. Innocent, naturally. Abandoned. Cherished. A lot of our kids feel abandoned. You might say, well, I was there the whole time. Not emotionally, you weren't there. Were you there emotionally? I don't know anything about that. Well, you need to know. Your child needed that, and you didn't do it. They create a void. They feel abandoned. Opposite to that is cherished. Cherished. Hurt. How about comforted? Oh. Rage. Calm. Yeah, calm. Keep things calm. Arrogant. Humble. Yeah. Awful. Wonderful. See how this works? Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, it's like having no and yes lists for children. Too many times, parents, you have too many no lists. You know, no, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. Don't touch that. Don't touch that. No, 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 no. Leave that alone. Stop that. Stop that. Don't touch that. Leave the doorknob alone. Where is the yes list? Children need to know what they can do instead of telling them what they can't do. So even with these emotions and feelings I'm giving you here, this list here, yeah, always let them know the opposite to that. So they know if they get on one side, what they need to switch to or transition to or make a shift to, okay? Like blaming. Blaming. What's the opposite? Forgiving. Burdened. Relieved. Yeah. Cheap. Valuable. Okay. Clumsy. coordinated. Oh, yeah, yeah. Some parents are real hurtful. They tell your kids, you clumsy little thing here. What's wrong with you? You drop everything all the time. What's wrong with you? You should never tell a child that. No, no. Say, I know God bless you with coordination. Okay? Right now you're not displaying that, but you have it inside of you. I know you do. I know you got coordination inside of you. Yes, let me help you. Come on, pick that thing up. You can do this. You can do this. I believe in you. I believe in the best in you because God put the best inside you, and I believe in that spirit that God put inside you. See? That's how we talk to our children. Competitive. Cooperate. Yeah, sometimes we take competitive to the extreme, okay? They learn how to step on people as they climb up the ladder of success. See? Compulsive. Rational, yeah. Condemning, how about forgiving? Oh, okay. Defensive, assertive. Yeah, you can see a difference? You can be assertive, and that's fine. Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm, nothing wrong with that. Defeated, victorious. Yeah. Yeah, if a child feels that they're defeated, I feel defeated. In my mind, son, you're victorious. Oh, yeah, that's what I see. I'm telling you, that would cheer a child up. I'm telling you, that would make their whole day. They'll remember that. Desolate. Joyful. Oh. Detached. Connected. Drained. Invigorated. Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, opposite. When a child expresses one side, choose the other side. See, teach them these things. I'm telling you, this will give you so many rewards in the end. Embarrassed. Confident. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Failure. Successful. See how that works? Yeah. There's an excellent book I want to recommend, actually, on the subject of feelings that I highly recommend to explore more in depth why our feelings cannot be neglected for long. Yeah, I use that as my reach for this book, Reconnected. We have to either now or later address old and current feelings that don't get the attention that they need. All right, the book is entitled Feelings, Buried Alive, Never Die. Again, Feelings, Buried Alive, Never Die by Carol with a K. Carol K. Truman. Look it up. Oh, yeah, I recommend that. When you neglect your feelings, what you're really doing is disrespecting and dishonoring your own soul, your inner child. When you do this, believe me, you're going to pay dearly sooner or later. Oh, yeah, and I'm telling you, parents, do not neglect your children's feelings. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Honor their feelings. Make them feel comfortable and expressing how they feel. You need to know. And when they say something, honor that. Say, I really love how you express how you really feel. I didn't know you felt like that about your sister, about me, about your daddy, about your cousins. I didn't know. I'm so glad. I want you to always feel okay and coming to me expressing how you really feel, okay? Yeah, I love that in you. Yeah, do that. Do that. It's so important. Yeah. So I'll rephrase this sentence. When you as a parent neglect your child's feelings, what you're really doing is disrespecting, dishonoring their own soul, their inner child. When you do this, you're going to pay dearly sooner or later. All right. Maybe in the form of depression, unexplained moodiness, of uneasiness, discontent. Feelings of unfinished emotional business in the past that has created an emotional block, preventing you from proceeding to enjoy life fully. That's a good one. That's a big one. That's a big one. If you don't take care of your own feelings, especially when you reach 80. Now, 80 is a year when, I'm telling you, if you don't reconcile those old feelings, they come out to haunt you. You start getting arrogant, paranoid, you haven't slipped into mental illness. You start seeing things, hearing things. You lash out at people who you used to love. Blame folks. Paranoid. You're just you're suspicious. Yeah. You start imagining and blowing up all kind of fantasies you had when in your childhood. They come back. Oh, yeah, monsters. I'm telling you. Yeah. So watch this. I'm telling you, feelings of unfinished emotional business in the past. Oof. This is how you would pay, possibly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they create an emotional block preventing you from proceeding to enjoy life fully. So your inner child is not going to allow you to disrespect for long. Your inner child will strike back, and you will feel its wrath in one form or another. See, we have to honor and respect our inner child in order to have a truly peaceful, balanced, loving, and happy life. You have to also guard your soul or inner child from the attacks of others. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You have to be your inner child's best friend. And this will be demonstrated as we clearly visualize your new relationship with your self you once were, your child's self. Self you once were, younger self. All right. We're going to take a pause right there. You know, I know some of that didn't fit you guys, especially when I was talking to parents, because especially those who want to tune in for the personal growth aspect. But, you know, you get yours. Right now, if you don't support that, you know, or nurture that child self inside, problems now. I say if you have, all of us have this cycle of dysfunctional family patterns, you be the one to break the cycle. Stop it. Stop continuing a cycle that doesn't work for you. It doesn't serve the higher interest in you. Stop it. Don't do it. You know, we got to stop it somewhere. Yeah, so I have one uncle. I got so many stories of my own past. I have an uncle, alcoholic abuser, partier, you know. All right. He died. And his daughter married someone acted just like him. He's an alcoholic. Now, he's not an abuser. He's an alcoholic and kind of puts her down sometimes. And she accepts it. She loves him. Okay. All right. Now, she has a daughter married to someone who cheats on her, has, you know, an adulterer. And a controlling person. Okay? Now, she has a son who's depressed a lot. Actually, tried to commit suicide recently. Has a girlfriend that had his baby, and she's controlling him. Yeah, she's controlling him, using the baby against him and taking the baby away from him and saying, you'll never see your baby unless you do what I say. You see? That's three generations right there. No, four generations, excuse me. Four generations right there of the cycle continuing. Nobody in that cycle is saying, look, I'm stopping the cycle right now. I'm adhering to a healthy lifestyle, and I'm not going to continue this form of dysfunction and codependency, addictions, abuse. I'm not doing it. I'm not controlling anybody, and no one's going to control me. I'm not having a welcome mat for abuse or addictions from anybody. I'm going to have an independent thinking mind like God has given me and have the best and attract the best into my life. Yes, somebody has to stop the cycle. Well, in your situation, let it be you. You be the one to stop the cycle and take on only that which is healthy and health promoting. Yes. If you're in a toxic relationship, you don't have to be in that relationship. If it can't be fixed, then by all means, try and fix it. If it can't be fixed, a person wants you to stay in that toxicity, a relationship, get out. Run. Get out of there. Yeah, you don't deserve it. You deserve only the best. If they can't give you the best, you need to be with somebody else. First, healthy by yourself. Okay? All right, we'll stop there. I am Nazim Abdul-Rashid, author of Reconnected, How to Be a Mentor to Your Child Self. Go to my website. After the three W's, we have cloudsofabundance.com. cloudsofabundance.com. My email, nrbookclub@gmail.com. You can get the book that way, or Barnes & Noble or Amazon. If you like going there, you can get it there. Okay? My show called The Reconnected Show happens every Saturday. All right? So if you're on the East Coast, a lot of you listening are on the East Coast, you like to listen on your phone. So at 2 o'clock your time, just call 347-994-2524. Again, 347-994-2524. And just listen. I have personal growth guests on there all the time. I very seldom speak, so far I do the beginning part relating to my book, and then I bring the guests on, and then I interview them, okay? All right, so you can listen to that show, or you can actually go to my website, Clouds of Abundance, and fill out the mailing list, and I'll put you on a mailing list, and you'll know every week what's going on with the Reconnected Show, and I'll tell you what's happening as far as discounts on the book or different things I might be doing in relationship to the book, okay? All right? If you want life coaching, by the way, yeah, call me. I do life coaching on the phone. So it doesn't matter where you are. You can be in Jersey right now, Trenton over there. You can be New York, Staten Island, doesn't matter. You can call me, and we can have a session on the phone. Go to, again, cloudsofabundance.com. Go to the contact page and fill it out. Let me know what's going on. I'll give you information about life coaching, okay? We can have sessions right on the phone. And get your life in order. It's important to have a good life now. Don't wait to, you know, to you're 85 to start a new life. If you are 85, start then. I don't want to discourage you if you are of that age, okay? I love my seniors, all right? All right? So that's what I'm talking about, okay? So, you know, don't be satisfied with a boring life. Don't do it. Have fun. And accept only that which gives life. That's it. Nothing else. Don't be with someone because you're doing it for the kids. I'm doing it for the kids. The kids would love having a happy stepmom or happy stepfather, more so than toxic mother, toxic father in their household. Do the right thing for the kids. Have a happy household, one way or another. All right? Okay. With that, we're going to stop, and we'll have part 17 next week, I believe. We're going to continue our talk on identifying and managing emotions. And I'd love for you to hear from you on the air. You can just call and raise your hand by hitting number one on your telephone, and I'll bring you in on the conversations, all right? All right, with that in mind, we'll stop right now, and I'll end the program like I started, with you having only the peace that God can give, okay? So may the peace that only God can give be with you. Assalamu alaikum.